Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel live broadcast. Today we are talking to amazing, utterly incredible coach and physio, Tim Piggott from HP3 Coaching, about how best to recover from an ultra, both in body and in mind. So, Coach Tim.
Yeah, hi, how are you doing?
You're training for the Ridgeway Challenge, 86 miler at the moment, and you're recovering from Lavaredo 120k, and before that was UTS 100k. So you've done a lot recently, quite close together, so we're going to be talking about how you recover quickly. And also, I just got to slip this in there, with your past history of total rehabilitation from near-death car accident, you are no stranger to recovery, are you?
No, it's... is actually my anniversary / rebirth tomorrow, 23rd anniversary tomorrow, yes.
Yeah, oh, wow, congratulations. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a far more complicated type of trauma recovery, that one. Yeah. We're obviously talking about race recovery and maybe a little bit of training recovery. I've got to get this in here because you've also recently raced yourself. You talk about me, but of course you're also
racing. You're still, having a chat to people, making a film.
Yeah. You've got to get it in there, haven't you? I know it's been talked about a lot already, but of course you did your later in 50 and you're now in the sort of process of recovering from that. Just before we went live, we were obviously talking about what you've been doing or not doing over the last couple of years. Quite purposeful. But again, that's something else that we'll touch on, about sort of, you know, how quickly to get back into it again and things like that. So I know you've had a few questions from the patrons and you had a few questions yourself. But I think we'll talk about some recovery. But these principles are not just about post-race. These same principles do also then apply in training as well. And but within training, we need to appreciate that some of these recovery strategies, and people will be quite aware of some of the more fancy recovery strategies that we use. But there's always a balancing act, because when it comes to training, we're looking to stress our bodies in order to get a response. And if we use lots of these fancy recovery tools, we can often lessen that training response. So we do need to be a little bit careful about when we apply these recovery strategies and some of the more higher level recovery strategies, because of that blunting effect of the training effect. But of course, after a very stressful, either very stressful training session, or particularly we're thinking about within this chat, it is about those races, then we may be looking to really maximise our recovery and blunt the negative effects of that stress on the body. And yes, you touched on the fact that I've done some fairly big races in relatively quick succession. It's not too bad for me, this one in between Lavaredo and the Ridgeway Challenge coming up. It was a tighter turnaround between Ultra Trail Snowdonia and then going into Lavaredo, and only had about 6 weeks there. So it was obviously after UTS, you know, there's a lot of stress on the body with that kind of vert. To then try and turn it around and go into Lavaredo, that was a challenge. Did I get it right? Debatable. Probably could have done with another couple of weeks there.
Yeah, it's just a race placement. It wasn't probably what you did at all.
No, but at the same time, you know, my colleague Emma Stewart from Scarpa, you know, she turned around a win at obviously the 100 mile at Ultra Trail Snowdonia, and then managed a podium at Lavaredo as well. So she rested a lot more than I did, and obviously that for her. So
yeah,
it just goes to show rest is really, really important.
Yeah.
But anyway, I've sort of rambled a bit there. Did you want to sort of...
Yeah, I'll kick off some questions. I think that's a great intro, Tim. So that's really useful to know about the recovery things as well. Like, yeah, are you talking about things like those massage guns and those kind of rolling things that we
put
your legs into? Like, are those actually preventing us from training hard? Like, that's really interesting to think about.
No, so those type of tools, so the massage guns, foam rollering, things like that, that's okay. It's more people often use like ice baths, mm-hmm. cold immersion, those type of things, which are really good if you're needing to recover for the next day. Maybe you're doing, you know, back-to-back races or, you know, competitions, you know, properly used in sort of team sports, for example, where you might be in a tournament and you're competing day after day, or multi-day racing, things like that. But there is a blunting effect. So, you know, cryotherapy can help. It's more of a neurological recovery than metabolic, but that's another side point. So it can be useful, but it has its place. And you need to appreciate that if you're using things like cryotherapy, it will have a blunting effect on your training response. So what's more important, the training response and getting fitter or not being so sore and able to then push hard again the next day? But maybe not get the same benefits of that initial training session or competition, that race.
Yeah.
It needs to recover for the next race if it's, you know, a back-to-back competition or multi-day. So those are just the other things to kind of bear in mind.
Okay, that's interesting to know. So, yeah, ice cold bath on a multi-day race. And I know we've got a question from Jade about multi-dayers coming up. So
okay,
that's good to know. So ice baths and, like...
Yeah, get in the stream, get in the river, get in the lake. After that stage, if you can. Brilliant. Yeah, absolutely.
And after races, get in that river, but not necessarily after training. Yeah.
No, again, it depends on, you know, what that race is. You know, you might be doing midweek racing as your hard training session, but you're wanting that, you know, in some ways you're wanting that little bit of soreness because that's your body responding to that stress and it will then respond and it will get stronger. But if you get rid of any of that soreness, then there's no stimulus for your body to then adapt from that training session to get stronger. So, yeah. So that's where we need to think about these in their right place and the right time.
Yeah.
But I think the main part of this chat was thinking about obviously after racing, about hard racing. And I know you were asking about, you know, what do we actually do to our bodies? You know, what is this damage?
Yeah, why do we even need to recover? Like, I know that's a really ridiculous question because obviously you like kill yourself on a race, but what are we actually doing to our bodies when we run an ultra distance? Like, what did I do to myself when I ran 50 miles on the Lakeland 50? Because it seemed it was quite easy. I was a bit disappointed. It was a bit easy until 40 miles, and then it was midnight and it was 10 miles to go. There's a real sting in the tail at the end of the race. It's like a very steep bit at the end. It was quite rocky. And the last 10 miles, you know, it was harder and it was 2 o'clock in the morning when I finished. So that was, you know, I was a bit tired, but it wasn't that hard. And then the next day I could just walk around. I mean, like, what do we do to our bodies? Does it just depend how well prepared you are as to how broken you are afterwards?
To an extent, yes, yeah, of course.
What does it do?
So, generally speaking, let's be honest about it, ultramarathons are not healthy. They're not
really
good.
Oh, well, I felt great on the 50 for most of the way. I was enjoying it.
You know, we push, but the thing is, we push our bodies, and we, you know, for a lot of people, you know, you push your bodies to the limit. As to how much damage we do, yes, there is certainly a question about how much training you've done. So obviously, the better trained, the better prepared you are, the less of a shock to the system that race is going to be. So, you know, this is where you can be looking at the elites, and they can be banging out big races week in, week out, or in, you know, they can be doing multiple, you know, big, very hard races. But actually, the race isn't pushing them beyond their limits in terms of what their average training week is looking like. Whereas obviously, for, you know, for an elite athlete, 100 mile weeks in training, that might be fairly average. But for your average age grouper doing a 100 mile race, that's a lot more than their usual weekly volume.
Yeah.
And therefore, you are pushing yourself beyond your usual limit. So you are going to be causing some damage and some breakdown. You know, you as an individual, you've got a big depth of experience, and you've also done some big days this year as well. So, you know, and again, you went into the 50 very much with a case of, I just need to, you know, get to that finish line and enjoy myself.
Yeah.
And yet, or you probably held back. You probably could have gone quicker.
Yeah, I could have. I was in queues a bit as well, so that held me back. Exactly. But I thought, oh, that's probably good at the start of the race, because then you don't go too fast. But yeah, I did go around with the goal of enjoying myself. So I suppose if I wasn't hurting, I could have pushed myself a bit harder. But that's not really why I do them. I don't want it to hurt. Like, that's the thing. I don't want ultra running to hurt. I want it to be nice. I like when it starts hurting, I don't want to do it anymore.
So it depends what your goals are in terms of how hard you're going to push yourself. So you can either push harder and go faster, or you can take that step back and not damage yourself so much.
Sounds good.
so yeah, there's that. And I think it's also worth noting that actually female athletes often don't break themselves quite as much. Now, why that is probably debatable in terms of, so one of the markers that we look at is how much muscle breakdown there's been, how much damage to those muscles, with an enzyme called creatine kinase. So measuring the levels of CK in the blood. And there's been studies looking at males versus females. And this, it was at, pretty sure it was UTMB, that paper. And interestingly, the levels of CK in the blood in the female athletes was less than the males for equivalent times. So why is that? Is that because women are better at basically preserving their muscle tissue? Is it that women are better at pacing themselves and they don't damage themselves as much early on in the race? Debatable. You know, we do know that female athletes are generally better at pacing themselves than male athletes, and that's probably more of a psychological thing. Women are generally smarter and more sensible than men. Comes down to.
I don't know if we have that same sort of like competition. Well, I'm sure we're all very competitive, but I don't know. Some men have this sort of machoism going on, which is sort of a bit of toxic masculinity going on, where they're like, "Oh, gotta prove myself."
Elements of that, yes. There's certainly that comes into it, and maybe we need to get one of our sports psychologists on to maybe talk about that.
Yeah.
but yeah, so you know, there is muscle damage, and there can be very significant muscle damage. You know, the levels of muscle damage in athletes after an ultramarathon that are still technically healthy and functioning day to day. But if you do a blood sample on them and compare that to somebody that was in hospital, the medical team at the hospital will be absolutely freaking out because levels are off the charts.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it can be really quite significant. And that's why, you know, you get some of the muscle soreness, but, you know, the difficulty in walking, you know, the classic having to come down the stairs backwards.
Yeah.
And there's a whole host of other sort of problems that then flow on from that one. You know, we can get damage to our kidneys. People are probably more familiar with things like hypernatremia, where we can basically get dilution of the blood. But again, we get the damage to the kidneys. And that, again, people may be more familiar with things like the advice about not taking ibuprofen, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, because of that dehydration. And again, the damage to our kidneys because of that. But again, we get all these byproducts, these waste products from damaging our muscles. And they're obviously going to get filtered out by the kidneys. So then we can get, obviously, kidney irritation damage from that. We obviously stress our guts, our digestive system, to a huge extent. Obviously, we're consuming a lot of calories during an ultramarathon. And a lot of the time, that's very simple carbohydrates, which are often not superb for our guts.
And our teeth as well.
And our teeth. We talked about that a little bit last time, didn't we?
Yeah.
So that obviously stresses the gut in terms of the healthy bacteria, and we can be damaging those levels of healthy bacteria. Obviously, we're exercising, so more of our blood is going to our muscles, less is going to our gut. So again, that's some of the stress that the gut goes under. But yes, the damage to that healthy bacteria, the good bacteria in our gut, that can be a knock-on effect later on in terms of your recovery post-race, not then absorbing nutrients well from our food. There's a link between sort of post-race blues, that sort of almost kind of post-race depression. And there's an interesting question being posed elsewhere, and I had a really interesting conversation with one of my athletes, who's also an anaesthetist and multiple spine winner himself, and so on and so forth. Tom Hollins, look him up.
Oh, I've met him. I met him a few times, like on the spine, reporting on the spine in previous years. And also, he helped Sabrina on her Pennine Way record.
So again, we haven't managed to do it yet, but a really interesting question is, you know, what is there a link between the damage to our gut and our mental health? Because there is a link between your gut, your enteric nervous system, and your mental health, you know. So if there's damage to the gut, is that part of why we then have some of those post-race blues, and then obviously vice versa? So, you know, there's a big inter-system link with everything that's going on here. So I think what I want to get your listeners, people watching the YouTube, is thinking about it. Post-race recovery isn't just taking a few days off. It isn't just making sure you get some good sleep. We need to be thinking about lots of different aspects of that recovery and what kind of damage we have done to our body. And it'll vary. You know, I know people that can run 100 miles and, you know, a couple of days later, they're back out running again. And other people are going to need weeks off.
Yeah.
So it depends on your level of experience. It depends on how hard you push yourself. It depends on, what your next goals are, of course, as well. Talk about the sort of next goals, and we had a bit of a chat off air about yourself and what I was just talking about there in terms of the post-race blues. I always get people to think about what is coming up next before you've done that race.
Cunning.
The start of this, that I've got another race coming up in a couple of weeks' time. I'm already thinking about what I'm doing next. I've already started recce-ing my next event. So as soon as I finish that race, yes, I'm going to have some time off. I'm planning quite a long time off, actually. And even though I'm planning quite a big break and recovery after this race, I'm already thinking about what's coming next.
So will that be next year then, if that's quite a long time off?
It's probably going to be next year. Yeah, I doubt I'll get this done before the end of this year. So I'm thinking about a challenge that I've got lined up. Keep that under wraps just now, but a challenge I've got lined up. probably for sort of springtime next year. But I'm going to start the planning and prep work almost now, even though I've got another race coming up.
Amazing.
So it just means when you finish that race, you know, I've invested a lot in this race that's coming up. And often people, when they're building up to a big challenge, it might be 12 months worth of investment or longer.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it's done. Well, now what?
Yeah.
And that's where these post-race blues can come in, because it's suddenly like, well, I've lost this kind of purpose, this reason to exercise, yeah, train, to whatever. So it's having something else, yeah, to then look forward to, even if it's just a holiday. And I know yourself, you've just taken a bit of a holiday after doing your race, you know, reconnect with friends and family and things like that. And that's, again, something that you can then look forward to. You cross that finish line, initial recovery. Oh, great, I've got a holiday coming up. Fantastic, something to look forward to,
yeah,
rather than just, oh, it's back to work on Monday, yeah, and nothing else going on.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big part of it as well.
Yeah, book a day off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, if you've had to book childcare during the race, think about the next day as well. Book childcare for the next day, because that's the day when you don't want to be running after a toddler, is, yes, that first next day and the one after.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, because you might, yeah, be no to anybody.
Yeah, and hopefully you've sort of enjoyed that training, because it's not all about the race day, is it? Like, you've enjoyed your training. Like, I enjoyed the fact that I tried to do everything I could to train. Like, I went out with the buggy. Like, Finley was waking up really early, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning. I was really proud of myself that I, like, got him in the buggy, went for a 5 mile run, or, yeah, did hill reps with the buggy, even parked him halfway, yeah, up a hill, did hill reps.
Photos.
Yeah, and I was really proud of myself. And I think that's why I found the 50 kind of quite, like, easy in a way, because I didn't realise how much training I actually had managed, yeah, to get done. And I just trained really smart, like, because of all those chats with you, and I, you know, trained with my poles, and I ate during training, which I never used to do, and I did loads of hill reps, loads and loads of hill reps, not like sprinting or anything, but just hiking up the hill, yeah, with a heavier backpack, slightly heavier than what I was going to take. And I felt really strong, and I did strength training every week, yeah, and I felt really strong on the 50. So it definitely inspired me to do more. But yeah,
training works.
It's
funny that, isn't it?
Training works. I know. It's so funny. Yeah, I never used to train. Like, I did ultras like 10 years ago, and I'd just rock up, and then it would hurt really a lot afterwards. But yeah, that's why I was wondering why, if there was a big link between how much you've prepared and how much it hurts afterwards. And I think there might be.
Of course there is. And I think we talked about this before, and when we think about sort of planning for races. And you've got to be honest with yourself about how much training you can actually get in for an event. And we had a chat a while back about, you know, well, what's the minimum you can do for an event? What's the, you know, the minimum amount of training to get through it? And yeah, okay, there is a minimum that you can do. But of course, the less you do, the more the event's going to hurt.
Yeah.
And if it hurts a lot, are you going to enjoy it? And are you going to look at it in a very positive light?
Yeah.
So,
it's going to hurt afterwards as well.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, of course, the more you can do, the better prepared you're going to be, the more you'll enjoy it, the more you'll smile, and the less it'll hurt overall.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Just goes to show training works.
Training
it?
Helps. Training helps a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've got a few questions on the live chat, which I'm going to get to in a minute, because we've got a question from Trail Running Phil about multi-day, and I'll cover that with Jade's question as well. She's watching, yeah, as well. And also Peter has tendonitis, so on his knee. Oh, yeah. On the knee, is that right? I think he did it while sleeping, which was a very interesting way to get an injury. So yeah, we've got that question as well. But I was just wondering if we could just go through. So we've covered like why we need to recover. What about like immediately after? Because I've just taken sort of 2 weeks off. I've been walking. I've done a bit of hiking and carrying Finley in the backpack and a bit of jogging, basically.
Yeah.
But recovery, is there a sort of a timeline? Like, what should we do immediately after we finish, and then an hour or two later, and then the following day? Is there some rules that we could follow there that, like, is best practice?
Yeah, so it somewhat depends on what comes next in terms of, are you looking for a very quick turnaround?
Ah, okay.
So if you really are looking at a very quick turnaround in terms of, recovery before your next event, then, you know, you've got to put some serious thought into this. And, you know, the recovery starts obviously as soon as you finish the race, but you could even argue that recovery is starting both within the race as well. So okay, when I'm meaning about within the race, and you just mentioned about, you know, you were learning to eat more in training. and people will be sort of familiar with some of the research that's come out about really trying to increase the number of sort of grams of carbohydrate we can take on board during training. And, you know, historically we used to talk about getting 60 grams an hour, and then there were some studies coming out looking at the mountain marathon runners taking sort of 120 and the cyclists taking 120 and some even more than that. But one of the key things about that was there was less muscle damage post-race. So people were able to recover better because they'd taken on more calories during the race.
Yeah.
If people haven't seen it, I'd encourage you to look at some of the analysis of Killian Dewey's nutrition strategies. And this was sort of last year, looking at sort of Hard Rock and UTMB. I thought it was on his, is it Mountain, like MTN website? And then a few people have done some analysis on that. Okay. So again, there's a few things out there. There's a few podcasts out there. I'll try and maybe find the links and send them through later.
And yeah, and I can put them in the film description below and the podcast show notes. Yeah, that would be great.
There were some things that Killian was taking nutritionally, and people were like, well, why are you doing that? Because that's not helping for the ultramarathons you're doing. Things like some of the nitrates. We know that taking nitrates, like, you know, beetroot juice, nitrate, can be very effective for short distance, high intensity training. Great. But he was taking it in an ultra. And people were like, well, why? And he's like, okay, but it's not really helping me in terms of the race itself, but it was improving my recovery afterwards.
Yes. Oh, wow. Like, okay. Get your beetroot out and munching.
And other things like, you know, increasing the fat and the protein content of the in-race nutrition. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's probably some benefit within the race, but it's more about lessening the damage and therefore improving the recovery afterwards for that quicker turnaround.
So not just sugar.
No. So therefore, so that's what I'm saying about, you know, your recovery is starting within the race as well. It's not just about the post-race recovery. But then, of course, you cross that finish line and you need to start rehydrating. You need to start refueling as quickly as possible. So there's your, you know, your recovery drinks, whether it's, you know, your protein shakes, or whether it is just quite simply a glass of milk and a banana and then getting, you know, some proper food in. So then, you know, most finish lines will usually at an ultra marathon then involve some form of catering, won't they? So then you go and get some proper food.
Yeah.
Then you go and get showered, changed, get some more good quality food on board. So it's getting that, those building blocks back into your system as quick as possible.
Yeah.
Then you need to be obviously dealing with any muscle soreness. So it might be a case of, yeah, getting in the lake, getting in the river, getting in the cold shower. And that's almost more of a neurological, just calm everything down. Yes, put your compression gear on. So whether it's your compression socks, leggings, these type of things, they can certainly be helping. But the biggest thing is then get some sleep. So, yes, I've got some fancy tools and I can talk about this a little bit more later. I've got a partnership with Compex, for example. So I've got the massage guns. I've got the electrical stim. I've got the compression boots. They're brilliant. But unless you're nailing the big rocks of good sleep and good nutrition, adding all the fancy stuff in is going to have a much smaller effect than just getting some good quality sleep and some good quality food. So, you need to obviously then nail that initial post-race recovery. If there isn't anything coming up straight away, then, you know, I put it down for my crew, for my race plan for after the Ridgeways, you know, cross the finish line, pizza and beer. That's what I'm going for, yeah, beer's rehydration, pizza's good carbs, all the rest of it. But, you know, you've got to nourish your body. It's not just about fuel. It's about enjoying food as well. So, you know, go out there, eat the nice things. You know, if you have restricted yourself from, you know, certain, you know, I don't know, banana split sundaes, Knickerbocker glories, all the ice creams, and things, crack on, have it, enjoy it.
Go out, great.
Nice meals.
That's the reason we run, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, going out for massive slices of cakes and all the rest of it. Enjoy your food, because that's what it's all about as well. It's not just about seeing food as fuel. It's, you know, you've got to enjoy it. I'm going off on a tangent here, aren't I? So nourishing the body after the race, but nourishing your soul as well. So, you know, enjoying the food, going out for nice meals with your friends, celebrating. I think you asked a question off air about, you know, should you celebrate with alcohol, shouldn't you? Well, if you're going straight into another race, if you're really needing to nail that recovery, yeah, you don't want to go out and have a bender. You know, one beer, glass of wine, that's going to be okay. But as soon as you go into the sort of threes and fours, you're going to be starting to have a negative effect. But then if there isn't anything coming up immediately, go and enjoy some time with your friends, because you probably haven't been doing that in training. So, yeah. In terms of obviously getting back to the body and healing the body, you may have blisters, you may have some, you know, some sore areas, things like that. You obviously want to deal with that, you know, get them cleaned up, get them dressed. So manage anything like that.
And then should we need you to patch them up before you go to sleep, or should you let them sort of breathe whilst you're sleeping? Should you only patch them up, like, if you're going to start walking around again?
Yeah, so it depends on obviously the sort of nature of those blisters. Okay. So generally speaking, you want to let your body do its thing. Mm-hmm. So don't interfere too much. If you've got, you know, massive blisters, there's advice about draining them, but you've got to be very careful. Then introduce an infection, so making sure you're cleaning the area very well beforehand and then maintaining it clean afterwards. So if you have got really severe blistering like that, then the best thing is seek some professional medical advice about how to manage that. But generally speaking, yes, you want to let things air, let things heal naturally.
Yeah, I'll link up to that. We did a big blister chat with Nikki Summers from the Kate Rath Ultra,
yes.
And Aria Events, amazing, yes. Doctor. So I'll link to that in the film description below in the podcast show notes as well, because that's the know-how of blister treatment.
There you go. I won't try and repeat any of that.
No, you've just said it in a nutshell, which is great.
Yeah. So you then can look into obviously deal with any of those niggles, any of those initial problems there. And then it's looking at just trying to keep yourself gently moving so you don't seize up. And that could just be going for a gentle walk. It could be going for a swim. It doesn't have to be anything sort of more than that, quite simply going for a walk around the block. You know, the day after an ultra marathon, you may not feel like it, but going for a 20-minute, 15-minute walk around the block, you might not be enjoying it in those first couple of minutes, but you're probably moving better and feeling better after that. So simply just going for a walk, getting the muscles working, getting the blood pumping, that's going to help with any swelling you've got in your feet and your ankles, things like that, rather than just lying around, sitting around and just letting everything pool.
Yeah. And wondering, like, what happens if you have to drive home? Because I was really glad that I shared a lift to the Lakeland 50. Yeah. And so my friend Brian drove most of the way home until he was about to fall asleep at the wheel an hour from home. So I took over then. But yes. It was okay. But I wouldn't have wanted to drive for 4 hours.
Yeah.
Is there anything you can do if you're, or should you try to stay the night after an ultra, like for safety? Like if you haven't slept, like obviously that's a safety reason as well.
Absolutely.
But
yeah. So you've got to be safe, of course. So it depends on whether you're physically able to. And I think you've always got to have as a backup that you're not going to be driving. You know, I've driven home after long ultras before because I've been okay. And other times it's been a case of, right, now I need to just sleep in the car and then I'll drive off in the morning.
Yeah.
But you break it up into sections. So yeah. I think you've always got to have that plan that you might be expecting to drive home, but have it as a backup that if you're not capable of. So you mentioned about having childcare for the next day.
Yeah.
make sure you can do that.
Yeah.
So if you do need to stay over, you can, or if the race takes longer, then it's not a problem.
Yeah.
But once you are moving again, then that's as much as we need to be doing, just going for a bit of a walk. Like I say, maybe going for a swim, and again, the pressure of the water can help with any swelling. So there's just the high pressure there.
Yeah. That's what I did that actually after I did a couple of 20 milers before my 50 miler, and then me and Steve and Finley went for a swim, like just a toddler splash in the afternoon. Yes. And I thought, oh, that's good for recovery, isn't it? Because it's quite cold, exactly. The water, and just moving around gently, supported by the water. So I'm pleased with that.
I'll take, you know, the kids to the pool and just going in the little sort of toddler pool.
Yeah,
they can be playing around and I can just be shaking the legs off and doing a bit of stretching.
It's easy childcare, isn't it, swimming pools?
Yeah.
They're all floaty, so you don't have to even look at them.
That's it. So I think the first thing you want to think about there is restoring that mobility. So just getting your joints moving again, getting your muscles moving again, your tendons, so on and so forth. So that might be It might be just going for a walk. It might be going for a swim. It might be doing some yoga, some stretching, some massage, getting on the foam rollers, getting the massage guns out, things like that. So, you know, once you've nailed all of those, then you might be adding in the additional. So it might be using the massage boots. So I've got the Compex Air.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Boots, for example, there's obviously plenty out on the market. It might be then booking a massage as well and having someone else just work through your tissues. There's nothing magical about massage, but it does help just, yes, you know, get some circulation going. But more than anything, it helps you identify as, oh, I didn't think that area was sore and I'm finding a sore area. Oh, right, okay, I need to do a bit more work on that myself. So I get the tennis ball out, get the massage gun, stick, what roller, whatever it's going to be, and you can then be doing more work yourself. So sometimes going for a massage, yes, it makes you feel nice, and if you feel nice, you're going to be moving better, fantastic. But it's also a diagnostic exercise to find out, oh, I hadn't realized that muscle was sore, or that tendon was sore, or whatever it might be. So yeah, that's something to think about there.
And are all those products and also the massage, what that's doing is mainly promoting blood flow to the area so that it can get rid of the waste products and deliver the nutrients to the muscle. Is that basically what we're doing with all of these recovery things?
No, but that's what you'll hear.
Oh, okay. Oh dear. I wrote a whole article about that.
All the massage therapists will tell you that we're improving blood flow, that we're removing waste products and toxins and all this kind of nonsense. And I'm afraid it is just nonsense. There is no scientific
really?
Evidence. Yeah.
There's no scientific evidence that massage or any massage products promotes recovery.
That's different.
Oh, okay. But that's not how it does it. Oh,
yes,
okay.
It can, but probably not for the reasons that we thought.
Oh.
And people are still told that it does.
Oh, okay. So,
okay.
Maybe that's
that for another time. So, does massage work? Yes. Does it work for the reasons that you're told? Probably not, no.
How does it work then? What else does it even do?
Well, it's probably more psychological than psychological than it is physical. There are going to be some physical benefits, but those physical benefits are very, very short-lived. And yet the benefits are longer lived than the physical effects. Any change in blood flow is very, very superficial. So we're not really changing blood flow in the muscles, changing blood flow in the skin.
Oh, I thought we were sort of like promoting blood flow to the area, like pushing it all around and squeezing it.
No, your body's very good at doing that itself.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so, otherwise we'd just inflate and die.
Exactly. So, yeah, let's not go off too much of a tangent, otherwise we'll be here all day. but the simple fact is, you know, massage is useful.
Okay, good.
Treat yourself, book a couple of massages post-race just to help with getting things moving, getting you feeling better. If you feel better, you will move better. And if you move better, you will recover better.
Yeah.
So that's more what it's about. But the other thing is then just taking time off from training as well. So as we touched on, you know, you had some time off with, you know, your family, spending a bit of time with your husband, because all this training is time intensive.
Yeah,
isn't it?
And it makes you stressed, like fitting all the stuff in. I didn't realise how stressed I had become until I took this week off. And I was just like, why was I annoyed about all that? Like, yeah. What on earth? So, was I turned into a terrible person. Now I'm really relaxed.
That's it. And that's part of it as well. So, you know, spending that time with your friends and your family, reconnecting, having those meals out, going to the cinema, you know, taking a small break. You know, again, part of that post-race planning might be I'll plan a weekend away. So, again, myself, I've got my race, and then a couple of weeks later, I've got a weekend away with my wife, just to go and chill and relax. And, you know, again, so it's, you know, putting that time back into the family again, because we have obviously taken a lot of time away from the family with all the training. So yeah, there's that. And before we even then think about getting back into training again, it's making sure your body is ready for that. So it's restoring that kind of resilience in the body. And a lot of that is kind of, I think one of your patrons asked a question about sort of tendon problems. And yes, before we get back into that running again, is make sure that your tendons are healthy enough, that your muscles are healthy enough. So it's getting back probably into the weights room, into the gym, or doing some strength work at home before you start thinking about even returning to running again. So going through some, so with our athletes, we get them doing like an isometric routine. So some static, like wall squats, you know, static calf raise and hold, static split squats, those type of movement patterns, but just loading those tendons, making sure that they're healthy before we ask those tendons to deal with the impact forces of running again. Ah. And I would then say that when you do start to think about that endurance training again, it's a non-impact. So it's getting on the bike, okay, it's getting in the pool, it's getting on the cross trainer. So myself, I've got the lever system attached to my treadmill, so I can reduce the impact forces. So it's a bit like the Alter G treadmill, but this is using essentially elastic cables and shorts with pulleys on them. So I can lift myself up. So yes, get back into running, but less impact through the legs. So that initial post Lavaredo, those runs there, reduced impact, and then easing back into it again. So those things that you can then think about.
Yeah. And Nadia's got a good question that just ties in with what you've just been saying there. She says, I wonder how she'll know when the initial recovery time is over and when she should start moving again. Can you sort of feel it? Like, does your body start feeling like lighter, or do you just really want to go for a run? You don't want to go back too soon, do you?
Yeah. So again, that's kind of my final point there, is don't start back too soon.
Yeah.
And I think a very good rule of thumb is when you think you're ready to go running the next day, wait another day.
Yeah.
Just give yourself that extra day or so.
Or week, in my case.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it might be you take a week off, it might be 10 days off. There's some very rough rules of thumb. You know, for people racing a marathon, it used to be you know, you take a day for every mile raced, for example.
Okay.
I think that's going to be a bit much.
Yeah,
for,
26
you know,
days.
A mile, it might be kind of, or those kind of longer ultras, it might be a day for every 10 miles of race. So, you know, after a 100 miler, you're not going to think about running for a good maybe 10 days plus. Some people are different. Some people need longer. You know, I've worked with, you know, Olympic athletes, Olympic marathon runners, who after racing an A race, a key race, they will not run for 2 weeks, full stop. And other people who, you know, they're back training again within a few days.
Yeah.
So it really depends on the individual. You need to listen to your body. But I think listening to your body, you'll know kind of like, yeah, I feel like I go for a run tomorrow, or I feel like I go for a run today. Okay, I'm just going to wait another one. I'm just going to check, do I still feel that same way?
Yeah, that's interesting, because Andrew's got a question about that as well. Sorry, did you want to say something?
I was going to say, for some people though, when it's a really really big event they've done, they put a lot into that, and we're saying, right, you do need a longer rest and recovery, both physically but also mentally and emotionally and psychologically. Sometimes it's a case of, right, I'm going to make you wait until you're desperate to run it. It's kind of like, I'm so over resting, I'm really hungry to return to training again. And we kind of get through maybe 2 or 3 weeks before we get to that stage. So, you know, I've had people where it's like, yeah, I feel okay again, but do I really want to train? Not sure. We wait, we rest, until it's like, no, I really want to go for a run now. Okay, now you're ready.
Ah, that sounds good. Yes, yeah. A little bit of patience there. In sort of like the opposite vein, Andrew Knox, he did his first 100K. He's 45. In the Lake District. So I think it was the UTS 100K that he's talking about here. He has been susceptible to injuries in the past, and he finished it in 17 hours. Mm-hmm. That's really good, isn't it? 17 hours. Yeah, that's amazing. I finished half that in 13. So what would you suggest is a bare minimum for recovery from your first 100K being that UTS 100K?
I'm going to be really awkward and say there isn't a simple answer to that one, because everybody is different and every race is different. I've done 100K races where I've needed 3 weeks off, and I've done 100K races where I've needed 3 days off.
Okay.
So you've just got to listen to your body, and you can go into a recovery period after race and you're thinking, yeah, I'm just going to need a week off and I'll be grand. And then you try and get back into training, and it's very obvious that it's not all good. And it can be that you might have physically recovered, but you haven't maybe psychologically and emotionally recovered from that race. It might be that your legs are feeling fine, but your heart is saying, "No, I'm not ready to work hard again." I've done races where, you know, I've recovered from the mountain race, I've got no DOMS, my legs are feeling fine, I can run super easy, but as soon as I tried to lift the pace, my heart rate was just like, nah, I'm not going to work hard again yet, I need a bit longer to recover.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So it's multifaceted.
Okay.
That's where you've just got to listen to your body.
Okay, so he's listening live and he's just said it was the Lakeland Trails 100K, not the UTS, which is way harder. I got confused because he did go to the UTS, but I think he did the 50. So, yes, it was 100K Lakeland Trails. He said, "I'm only asking as I felt totally fine after 3 or 4 days. I waited until 7 days, ran an easy pace parkrun, but my soleus muscle developed a tear 2 miles in. I had no inkling this was coming even after a mile of running. The physio said it was a fatigue muscle that hadn't had enough recovery that led to the tear." So that's interesting, isn't it? Even more,
well, that's it.
Reason
it's, you know,
to wait.
You know, energy systems may have recovered, but absolutely, you know, muscle tissue is feeling fine walking around, but there's still a lot of healing that's going on there. So that's where, again, I get people to go through that we'll go into the gym first, we'll get on the exercise bike first, we're not going to rush back into running again. And it's kind of, you've got to tick those boxes of, yes, I can do those exercises in the gym. I know my tissues are ready to return to running.
Yeah. And was it an easy pace parkrun, Andrew? Can you ever go to parkrun and run an easy pace? I certainly can't. I get swept up in that competition.
But even an easy run, I mean, that's it. I think people do rush back too soon, because within a few days, you know, you are recovering and you often do feel quite good. And, you know, you get all that kind of, you know, that happy feeling of, I've just had a really good race, I've achieved a goal or whatever it might be, and it's like, yeah, I want to carry this up, you know, carry on going to the next thing, and we rush back too soon.
Yeah
We've all done it. I've done it in the past as well, you know, thinking, oh yeah, I've recovered, I'm fine, go and try and do a club run or something like that.
Yeah, just wait a bit. It's like being ill, isn't it? Wait one day more.
Just a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have you got any quick advice on tendonitis for Peter as well? He says it is in his knee, and he did it while sleeping somehow. Very restless bedtime antics.
I'm sure it won't have happened during sleep. It's probably more that it's something that's happened. You know, tendon problems are slow to come on. So it's things, you know, you're looking back 2, 3, 4 weeks and, you know, what's that training been over that last block? And has that been more than the previous 2, 3, 4 weeks? And that sort of ramp up. So it might be just that, yeah, everything seemed to be okay. And then during that recovery phase overnight, this is where the body's gone into maybe an acute inflammatory response. And that's why you then sort of woken up with symptoms that won't have happened overnight unless you did something random in bed or banged it or, yeah, or what, again, there are some other inflammatory conditions that could be manifesting. So the key thing is you've obviously got to go and see a healthcare professional and confirm that that's exactly what it is. And if you're struggling to identify that cause, then again, having someone work through and help problem solve and identify what the cause is, that's going to be key for then finding the solution. You've got to identify the cause, not just treat the symptoms. But sort of general advice when it comes to tendinopathies, tendon problems, is we're looking at loading programs. So it's looking at, as I mentioned, part of that recovery phase is looking at maybe sort of long sustained static holds. that can have a pain relieving effect on the tendon as well, as also having a beneficial stimulus in terms of the fibers in the tendon, the collagen fibers in the tendon. But then moving on to heavier loading. So again, it's getting in the gym or loading up your backpack or putting children on your shoulders or whatever it might be, and going through some slow, heavy movement patterns. So, you know, slow, heavy squats, step up, step down, things like that. That's what's going to really help strengthen the tendons to then be able to take the forces and the impact that running involves.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much for that. I'm sure Peter will be doing that.
Yeah.
Follow that advice, Peter.
Yeah. If he needs further help, then obviously find somebody locally, or I can set up with an online consultation with myself or one of the team.
That's brilliant. Tim is available and his whole team for any physio advice that you need and coaching advice as well. He's an excellent coach, I might say. I have completed 2 out of 3 ultras this year because of Tim, so thank you very much, Tim. And one wasn't his fault at all. I got ill.
So, Peter would say 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Yes, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. So I just want to just cover a little bit about them. I know we mentioned earlier, but just to cover these two questions that have come in about multi-day ultras.
Yes.
And then we've got a final thing just about, like, if you don't complete. So Trail Running Phil on the live chat says, question, any advice for a multi-day ultra event for preparing to run again the next day, i.e. what do you do before you go to sleep, and what do you do when you wake up? And I think that's pretty similar to Jade's, who's just saying that she's doing a 3-day event in 7 weeks time. It's going to have quite a lot of hills in it. About a marathon distance each day. Sounds like the Jurassic Coast, like one of them VO2 events. So yeah, what's the best way to recover after each one to minimise DOMS?
We've got things like Dragon Back coming up as well. So I'm sure you probably get people on the Patreon doing Dragon's Back. So we sort of touched on it before in terms of you've got to be thinking about that recovery almost before you cross that finish line. So making sure that you're taking on obviously enough calories during the run, but also starting to take on, you know, the fats and the proteins. So I would often carry like a sort of protein bar. So almost, you know, that last hour before that finish line, you start then eating some protein. You're starting to give your body the proteins that it needs to then start that repair process, or before you've even finished. So if you're going through aid stations, it's trying to pick up maybe things which have got a little bit more protein in them rather than just grabbing the simple sugars. Or if you are carrying your own nutrition, is thinking about, is there anything else in there which is a bit more real food? It has got more fat and protein in there. Then as soon as you cross that finish line, bang, you're straight into getting your rehydration on board. It's getting your carbs and your proteins back on board. So it's, you know, your quick acting recovery fuel. So whether that's a recovery shake, you know, processed recovery shake. If you've got access to, you know, shops and real food, it could be, you know, your milk or milk products, fruit, and then straight into, or, you know, yogurts, things like that. And then you're straight into your more substantial meal straight after that. Get cleaned up as quick as possible and get your compression gear on as quick as possible. It is going to help. It's going to minimize any of that natural swelling that you'll be getting in your feet and ankles. So get that on as quick as possible. When you go for that shower, you can be doing either cold shower or contrast, so hot and cold. If there is a body of water, jumping in the lake, in the stream, things like that, again, that's just going to help make your legs feel better. If you feel better, you move better. So that, yes, yeah, so you get cleaned up, get showered, maybe do some cold water immersion, cold shower, contrast shower, which, whatever you want. Get your compression gear on. Go through a little bit of stretching, just very light stretching, keeping your body moving. Maybe going through some massage. So if you've got a massage gun, either the big ones or like Compex, do a little mini one, just like a small handheld type thing. You know, that vibration therapy. Again, you know, I love the Compex stuff and the vibration stuff. There's nothing special about it. It's just that vibration, just tricking the nervous system. It makes your legs feel better. They relax off a little bit better. If they're relaxed and they feel better, you'll move better and you'll be happier. And therefore, you're ready to then push again the next day. So, yes, it might be just before you go to bed, do a little bit of stretching, 5, 10, 15 minutes, just going through some light yoga poses or some light stretching. And then, yeah, get some sleep. I would then advise taking some extra protein. So just before you go to bed is another sort of protein shake, or if you've got access to it, just some, you know, some, for example, Greek yogurt, getting that, or take some extra kind of whey protein powder with you. So again, help with that repair process overnight. And that's been shown to help. You could possibly think about things like some of the antioxidants. I know you've done some work with currants, haven't you?
I used to call it currans, and then I heard someone else call it currans and thought, yeah, actually, it is currans.
So, you know, again, you might be thinking about taking some, you know, high-dose vitamin C antioxidant in that initial recovery phase. Post-race as well, just to minimize the, you know, the free radicals that you've got floating around in your system there. So yeah, those are the kind of things you want to be thinking about. But it's about absolutely, you know, start the rehydration, the refueling as quick as possible. Try and do some cold of some description, get cleaned up, get some compression gear on, do a little bit of massage, a little bit of mobility work, eat some more food, get some more protein on board, sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or at least get in your bed. Sometimes it's just a question of just lying down, feet up, relaxing. Don't just sit there on your phone, stimulating your brain, just mental rest, recovery, eyes closed, go through some meditation or something like that. If it's a multi-day event, often it can be quite busy, quite noisy, you know, people finishing later. So don't get stressed about the fact that you're maybe not sleeping, but you're resting. And that's the important thing.
Yeah.
So just getting lie down. One of the guys I used to train with had a fantastic phrase, which was, why stand when you can sit? Why sit when you can lie?
Yeah.
So as soon as you get the opportunity, sit down, lie down, get your feet up, chill.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm looking back now to my Cape Wrath Ultra. I did 4 days of that and my hips were just screaming at me. And I just think now, knowing what I do about training consistently with a slightly heavier pack and doing loads of hill reps and also taking currans, which actually really helps for me with my joints, and also strength work, I just feel like there's a massive case for recovery not being what you do after the event, but what you do before the event. Like, I've just like this light bulb has, because I've been talking to you about all this stuff, this light bulb just come on in my head. And like, I want to say to all these people doing the 3-day events and things like that, train for your recovery. Do your strength training. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Oh, Jade B's listening as well. So she's doing the Atlantic Coast. That's her first multi-day of VO2 event. I thought it sounded like that. I've got that one on my to-do list as well. She says Currans is on her list to get as well. And do you know what? A few people in the Lakeland 50 said they were taking Currans now as well, because of hearing me talk about it. So yeah, it's taken me since they contacted me first in December, and it's taken me until now to actually be on board with it and actually think, yes, it does work for me, because I didn't really notice it before, but doing the bigger races, I definitely notice it, and I take it during the race as well.
Good stuff.
Yeah, and she says, all really good tips, thank you. She wouldn't have considered extra protein shakes before bed, and she's going to have a hot cold shower too when she gets back to the Airbnb, and a dip in the sea. That sounds absolutely fantastic.
That sounds good.
Yeah. So just before you go, Tim, I just need to read out, we saved someone's life with our chats. So I want to read this to you. G-Meth says, big thanks to you both. Last week I was stranded on a Croatian mountain. In a previous YouTube video, you said that trail running is a series of problems to be solved, and this helped me to survive. They're doing a YouTube video coming shortly. And they said, Croatian mountain rescue was superb. When panic hit at the top of the mountain in the middle of a thunderstorm, when all my batteries failed, I sat down and I said, what would Tim do? So we've saved someone's life.
Very good. That's it. Pause. Yeah. Thing. Don't panic.
Yeah. That's it. Mic drop and over. Yeah.
So, well, glad that came out right. Well done.
Yeah, good. That's amazing. Yeah.
So it's all life lessons that ultra running teaches you.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. Transferable to all sorts of life areas. Yeah. So you're a lifesaver, Tim. Well done. And you know, you talked about Compex a little bit. I'm going to put some links to those in the description below. So everybody have a look there.
Like I said, I'm not, you know, I don't push these things. I've got a relationship with Compex. And I'm part of their sort of practitioner network. So if anybody does want to learn more about Compex, then again, feel free to get in touch. Again, as part of their practitioner network, I always am able to purchase them at the lowest price available. So they provide us with a discount code every month. A link to their discounts. So if anybody else is running any offers, they will always match that. So if anybody did want to buy anything from the Compex store, I'm not allowed to tell you what the discounts are. Again, that's contract. But get in touch and I'll let you know. But it's always a significant discount.
Oh, okay. So how did they do that then? Go to your website?
Maybe just get in touch with me. Oh, okay. I'm not allowed to put it on social media about it.
In touch with
it's just part of the deal because they don't want it kind of advertised.
Okay. Well, this isn't advertising. There's only 20 people watching and only a further 1,000 will watch later. And there'll only be another 1,000 on the podcast
as
well.
I'm not allowed to sort of, basically it's not allowed to advertise and therefore undercut other people.
Oh, okay.
If anybody contacts me, I can always get the cheapest rate that month for any of the Compex pieces of equipment.
Cool.
So whether it is the massage guns or the recovery boots or the sort of, what they're more known for, things like the electrical stim.
Cool. Okay, well, secret handshake with Tim, and I'll put that in the show notes as well.
That's fine. Yeah,
cool. Well, we're just coming up to the hour now, so we've got 30 seconds left. I've got one question here about what if you DNF'd, like that's part of your recovery, isn't it, to deal with that, like in your mind it can affect people. Like I've got a friend who did the 50, she got a PB on the 50 on the Lakeland, and she tried to do the 100 a year or so ago, and she got timed out at about 35 miles and it really, really affected her, and she hasn't signed up for the 100 since. She's gone back to the 50, but she's really quite nervous about doing the 100 again, and she's a really, really good runner, and she's a very experienced ultra runner. It's not like she's just turned up and it's her first one or anything. She's done loads of the hard moors, and it just really caught her out, the timings, and she hadn't recce'd it and it got dark, and because it starts at 6 p.m. So that DNF's really affected her. And I remember when I DNF'd Cape Wrath Ultra as well, it took me a year to get that film made because I was really ashamed of myself, and like, because I do a YouTube channel about running and I'm like supposed to be, you know, like a good runner and absorb all these tips from the experts, and I couldn't do it, and I felt really down on myself about it. But actually now I find if other people DNF and they talk about that and they write about it and they film it, I find that much more interesting because they sort of know why they went wrong and they've learned something, whereas if it all goes fine and you just have a great race, then you don't really learn anything. So I thought maybe the next chat that we had could deal a bit more in depth about do we deal positively with these DNFs, and take what learning points should we be looking for next time. Would that be an interesting one for you? We haven't covered that yet, I don't think, have we?
We haven't talked about that.
Not in depth.
No.
Yeah.
We might have touched on it at some stage. I mean, it's a horrible, horrible experience. I still yeah, almost getting a bit emotional thinking about DNF that I had at Ultra Tour Monte Rosa. Mm. You know, gone into that race thinking I was going to do quite well, and it all just went horribly wrong. But reflecting back on that, I knew why it went wrong, and that DNF is what's then catapulted me onto having success at all these other events. So, you know, it was a process that at some stage I think everyone has to go through. And it is it's not a nice experience, but it is a very useful learning experience to have. And yeah. You'll grow a lot from it.
It's humbling, isn't it? It's very humbling.
It is humbling. And I think you need to go through, you know, grieving processes, because again, you know, if you DNF from a race that you've invested a huge amount of time, energy, money, yeah. everything into, and then it doesn't come off, you know, you need to grieve for that, and you've got to go through those same kind of stages of grief. But it is something that, you know, you will get over. And, you know, we use the, you know, the acronym, you know, DNF, but always change that to you did nothing fatal.
Yes, or did not fail, because you didn't fail because you learned.
Nothing fatal is also good.
Very
things
good.
That go wrong than the things that go right. Of course we do. But, you know, races will always be there, or the mountains will always be there. Races come and go.
Yeah.
But you can always go back. You can always do it again. You can always go and, you know, bury those demons later on. But, yeah, absolutely, you know, do nothing fatal. If you pull out of a race, it's usually for a jolly good reason.
So, like, you're not enjoying it.
Yeah, just, you know, not your day. And, yes, sometimes people will, you know, particularly maybe more the front end of a field, will pull out because it's not going to plan.
Yeah.
But if they pull out, it means that they can bounce back and they can race again very quickly afterwards, rather than grinding it out and doing the damage and needing a longer recovery.
Yeah, elites DNF all the time, don't they? They just drop out and they don't really think in the same way about it as we do. Like, because, well, you're an elite, so you're probably the same now. But for people like me, just in the middle of the pack, it's doing the race, it's having that experience that we're after, not going on the podium or having a tummy trouble and deciding to stop because, you know, we've got a race in 2 weeks' time. So
yeah, so we can talk about obviously the, you know, the reasons why people DNF, but then certainly the kind of the recovery after that in terms of psychological, emotional recovery. But, you know, if there's anybody listening here that's, you know, recently, you know, DNF'd, is I would just say, you know, be kind to yourself. You did nothing fatal. Recover from this. You will come back and you will be stronger in the long run.
Yeah.
But just accept that it is going to hurt in the short term.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah. And that was, I think we did touch on DNF a little bit after I DNF'd the Manx Mountain Marathon, because I wrote down the three reasons that I DNF'd and used that in order to train for UTS. So that was really useful. So actually DNFing can be really useful. It sucks, but it is really useful if you think about it in the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't just bury your head in the sand and feel sorry for yourself. Use it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Fab. Okay, great. Well, yeah, that's been amazing. Thank you so much, Tim. We've had loads of lovely comments here. Maria Knutson, all the way from Sweden, she says, great advice today. And Andrew Knox said, great show, Tim and Claire, another great show. Thank you, Tim and Claire, another great show. So everybody has really enjoyed that today. Thank you so much, Tim. It's really fantastic to chat to you. And next time we'll be chatting to Tim about how to deal with a DNF and learn from it so you can get back in the game next time. Good luck in your Ridgeway Challenge 86 miler. I think next time we chat to you, we'll have done that so we can get all the details on that. And hopefully you won't have DNF'd hopefully you won't be talking from first-hand information recently from that one.
Yeah.
Congratulations on which is your latest one, Lavaredo. Yeah, well, we have congratulated you for that already, haven't we?
Okay.
Yeah, well, good luck, and we will chat soon. Cool. Yeah, okay. Thanks, Tim.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.